2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Inaugural version of Tacos Fast 40, where we go through the entire DFS NASCAR slate 1 to 40 and give you the picks. Tacos Fast 40 is brought to you by DFSArmy.com. If you like the content that you'll be hearing today and you want to check out our cheat sheets for not only NASCAR but every other daily fantasy sport, including our brand new lineup optimizer for NASCAR that we'll be rolling out this week, then head on down to DFSArmy.com. We've got you covered. We're one of the best communities in the daily fantasy industry. We'd love to have you. So DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. Okay, so to begin, let's start with how are fantasy points scored in NASCAR for anyone that may be new coming on board that has no idea what they're doing. Basically, it's very different than every other daily fantasy sport, as in there's a maximum number of points to be distributed possible among the entire field. It's not just cumulative, and it's very predetermined, the number of points that can go around. You have finishing positions. The winner gets 46 points, then the second place guy gets 42 points, and then everyone underneath him gets one less point. So, like, third would get 41, fourth would get 40, etc., etc. Then there's place differential, which is key. If you start in 10th place and finish in 9th place, you get one place differential point. This is very important when checking out guys who will be starting in the back, probably like 30th to 40th, that could possibly get up to 30, maybe even 40 place differential points if they start in the back and go up to the front. I guess 39 would be the max there, but that's still a whole lot of points considering that 60 is a very high score. At least on a week like this, where there aren't as many dominator points. Now, dominator points are lead lap and fastest lap points. So, if you're in first place for, at the end of a lap, then you get 0.25 points. So, a quarter of a point, not very much, but those can add up over time. If you lead 200 laps, that's 50 points, right? But you would have to lead every single lap to get the 50 points here, and no one's going to do that this week. Fastest laps, they vary from track to track, but they're worth 0.5 points, and they're oftentimes a lot more helpful than lead laps, unless you know someone's going to lead the entire race or something. But at a track like this, they'll be kind of randomly dispersed, and they usually are sort of randomly dispersed. Just usually the person in first place at a normal track type would be more likely to rack up the fastest laps, but this is actually a kind of strange race. It begins the season at a different sort of race, and we'll get into that in a second. But just to summarize here, when you're looking at scoring and figuring out who you should put on your lineup, you kind of want to have a mixture of people who will get place differential and then people who will score the dominator points. But usually you're going to want more of the former than the latter. Especially at a race like this, first you want to look at how many laps there are, because some races have, you know, 200 laps like this one, while others will have up to 500, even 600 laps. So obviously that changes the dynamic every single week in what you're looking for. If there's a race with a whole bunch of laps, especially one like Charlotte where there's 600 laps and there isn't a lot of passing for the lead, then you definitely want to look at the dominator guys very heavily. But you don't want to roster four of them, you know? Because there's only so much to go around. At a track like this, one of the ones with a lower number of laps, you definitely want to take a strong look at place differential. So you want to find the stronger plays that are starting in the back of the field. And we'll focus on that a lot this week. So just keep that in mind. Don't think about fastest laps as much because they're very randomly dispersed, especially at a track like this. And as far as finishing position goes, sure, you know, if someone starting in the mid-tier or lower tier is starting up high, usually that will mean that they'll go backwards and get negative points for place differential there, but if they're like a specialist at the track or something and you really think they can hold on to their position, they might be a value, maybe, just depending on how the points get distributed that week and how often you need to find value, like, far down low. You know, if people aren't going to be passing a whole lot, and they're going to pretty much stick to the order, then maybe you can get away with someone starting up high, but you usually don't want someone starting in the top, like, 15, unless you think they're going to get dominator points for sure. So, on to Daytona. Daytona is a special track. Obviously, this is the biggest race of the year. It's the only sport that starts off with its biggest event. And Daytona is one of two restrictor plate tracks, the other being Talladega. And they're very special compared to how all the other tracks are because they limit the equipment advantage that you would usually find from week to week. Like, a lot of the top studs are just in much better cars week to week than the guys down below, but the restrictor plate restricts how fast they can go so that the field is a lot more evened out. And what matters a whole lot more is driving skill. Now, of course, the guys in the top tier equipment usually are the better drivers. All the studs are studs for a reason. The reason they have these great cars is because they're highly skilled drivers, so you'll still see them go up to the top, but it's also sort of a specialty craft, you know, being able to drive these restrictor plate tracks because there's a lot of drafting and just different skill that goes into restrictor plate racing, and certain drivers are just better at plate racing than others. That's for sure. You see that a lot, but I'll let you know who those are as we go through the field. Just know that when you're making your lineups, you want to pick one of these potential dominator guys. Just because of how the field is set up this week, one would be fine if they're starting within the top, like, 10 to 15. And you could even get away with zero this week, honestly. This week is all about place differential. So starting at the top, we have the most famous name in sports making his return after a half-year hiatus after a concussion, and that would be Dale Earnhardt Jr. at 10,600. Now, if you're brand new to NASCAR, you see a salary and go, wow, Dale Earnhardt Jr., I know him, he's on the back of all the pickup trucks. He's the best driver, isn't he? And the answer is no. He's never won a championship. He doesn't win races very often, unless they're restrictor plate races. He is perhaps the best restrictor plate racer in all of NASCAR. He has 4 wins at Daytona with 13 top 5 finishes. And at Talladega, he has 6 wins with 12 top 5 finishes. So he is an absolute restrictor plate specialist, sort of like his dad. He's very, very good, can always put up a win or a second place finish, but he could also crash. Now know that he's starting in second, and the only way for him to really hit value at such an expensive price would be for him to win and dominate and get lots of lead laps. Now, I'm not saying that that's unlikely. He's the Vegas odds-on favorite to win at 4.5-1. But know that those odds are slightly skewed. It's sort of like Tiger Woods, where they kind of price him up a little bit because they know everyone's going to want to bet him. But even if we take that at face value, we can assume, you know, one out of every 4 or 5 times he wins this race. But that's only about 20-25% of the time. And that's kind of risky, just given how popular he's going to be. He's going to be anywhere between 35 to 45% owned in GPPs. and the odds of him being in the winning lineup are a lot lower than that. So you either want to fade him completely and hope that he goes backwards in the field, which if you start anyone in the top, like, 10, they have a potential to crash, right? Everyone has a potential to crash at any time, and certainly at these restrictor plate tracks, people can get into very large crashes, usually at Talladega, but it happens at Daytona. If you're starting in the second position and you crash, that's 38 negative points added to your score, or taken away from your score, and that's just terrible. That will absolutely kill any lineup in any format. You won't cash unless he's ridiculously high owned. I don't think he'll be ridiculously high owned. I think people are wising up to it now. I think he was owned about 50% to 60% last year in this race. And he got messed up and he ended up finishing 36th. And if you faded him, you won, pretty much. That's how it was. So definitely look to fade Dale Earnhardt Jr. just because of that name recognition, because he'll be popular and he's just starting too close to the front. And the only way he has to hit value is if he completely dominates the entire race. Going on to Brad Keselowski at 10,300. Him and his partner in crime, Joey Logano, have won the last three restrictor plate races. And he won the July race here last year. He's an excellent plate racer. He's starting in the seventh position. And one of the things you'll note about him if you watch him in restrictor plate races is he is absolutely phenomenal at maintaining the lead. He'll head up front and he'll bounce back and forth between the top and bottom rows. If there are three rows even, he can juggle them all, block everyone trying to pass, and hold on to that lead for very long stretches of the race. He's part of Team Penske, and Team Penske is known for employing very tricky strategies to get the lead, be it a pit strategy or a lane running strategy. They're always doing different things, and he's usually kind of swerving around Joey Logano's strategy. They're always kind of doing something a little different. They're really shifty guys. They'll find their way to the front somehow, and they know how to run these races big time. So Keselowski starting at 7th. You still want to kind of generally avoid him, but he could absolutely be a dominator here. So he's definitely one of the guys you want to have in your rotation of potential dominators, just because he has a nose for getting the lead and keeping it for long stretches of time. I think that can lead to success here. Going down to Jimmy Johnson at 10,000. He's a teammate of Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s at Team Hendrix, and he'll be starting in the 24th position, but he's going to a backup car and will actually start in last, in 40th position. Now, DraftKings will score him as if he started in the 24th position, so it's important to note that. He crashed last time out in the July race and finished 16th at the Daytona 500, but he does have multiple victories here. He's the defending NASCAR champion. You know he's definitely going to make his way back to the front, so even though he starts in the back, he'll work his way up to the front in not exactly no time, but by the end of the race, he'll certainly be a factor. He's definitely someone that can get positive place differential, and maybe his news of being sent to the back will tone his ownership down a little bit. I like playing him a lot in GPPs. You're going to have lots of extra cash to spend because of all the plays down at the bottom, so I say you use him quite liberally. Underneath Johnson at 9,900, we have Joey Logano, Keselowski's teammate. He won here in 2015, the Daytona 500, and he also won at Talladega last year. He's an excellent plate racer, of course. He won the Clash, and that was a race from last week where it was pretty much an exhibition race here, but, you know, it's just for fun, but he showed excellent chops, although granted, Keselowski really was the one about to win that, but he and Hamlin were in first and second, and they crashed right as he was making, you know, a game-winning pass there, so just know any of those guys, Logano, Keselowski, Hamlin, they all look just absolutely phenomenal at the Clash. But anyway, Logano, excellent choice, starting 15th. So he'll get some place differential, and you know he'll work his way up to the top. He's one of the best plate racers there is. So he's a very solid pick. You can pick him as your one dominator, starting at 15th, and that's great. So one of my favorite picks for domination. Underneath him, Kevin Harvick at 9,700. He's in a Ford this year. He switched from Chevy. His entire team did, the Stuart Haas Racing Team. He'll be starting at 5th. He's one of the best racers in all of NASCAR, perhaps the best, just in overall skill. He does good at everything. You know, he won the 2015 championship. He's a threat no matter what track you're at. Every single week, he's a force. He's starting 5th. Good potential dominator. Three top 4 finishes the last 4 years, last 4 times here, because they race here twice a year. I did crash last time out in July, but if he's not crashing, he's posting a top 5 finish pretty much every time. I don't know if he'll lead the laps exactly, but he'll definitely be in the mix. So I don't like him as much as Logano or Keselowski or Hamlin, but he's still a solid dominator pick that you want to have in rotation. Underneath Harvick at 9,600 is Denny Hamlin, and we've been talking about him because I think he's the most likely to win. He edged out Dale Earnhardt Jr. in the qualifying duel, but since Dale Earnhardt Jr. already qualified in the top 2 during qualification, he didn't actually need to win the qualification duel. It's a complex process, but anyway, we saw Hamlin not only do that, but he also led the most laps in the Clash. He's looked dominant, and he is. If Dale Earnhardt Jr. isn't the best plate racer, then he absolutely is. He's the defending Daytona 500 champion. Always a top 5, top 3 threat. Anytime they're at a restrictor plate track, he's just absolutely excellent at them. He's the first member in the field that we see from the strongest team in all of NASCAR, the JGR Toyota crew. And him and all of his teammates are a threat any track. They're all just the best drivers in all of NASCAR. And Hamlin, his specialty are these plate races. So one of my strongest picks to dominate, starting 4th. So, you know, you wish he was starting lower, obviously. But he can absolutely lead laps here for sure. I'm sure he'll lead at least a handful. So definitely a threat to repeat his 500 victory from last year. And just someone you want to have in that rotation of dominators. Underneath him is Kyle Busch at 9,400. He's starting 21st, so great place differential play right there. Last year during the Daytona races, he finished 2nd and 3rd. He won the championship in 2016, just utter dominance. He's been fantastic over the last 2 years. Starting in 21st position, you just absolutely have to love the play a lot. Play him in all sorts of lineups. Awesome place differential because he's starting 21st, and you know he's going to finish in the top 10 for sure. Unless he crashes, which could be the case. He's a very aggressive driver, but that aggression will also lead him to a, you know, 5th, 10th place finish more often than not. And with the addition of the stages, which I forgot to mention earlier, the stages changes this year basically cuts the race up into 3 different pieces. So there will be 2 60-lap segments and then an 80-lap segment to finish it. So that means there are 3 different, finishes, but also 3 major restarts after that. And he's one of the best restarters in all of NASCAR. So I like Kyle Busch one heck of a lot this week. Probably my favorite play of anyone that we've mentioned so far. Next, we get my favorite driver, Chase Elliott, and he's starting in the pole position for the 2nd straight year, in the 2nd year of his career. So he's perfect so far on finishing on the pole position at Daytona, but what happened last year, him starting off the pole? He crashed almost immediately. It was a sad sight. Now, not only did he qualify first, but he actually looked really good in the first duel. He didn't even need to win, but he won anyway, so, you know, being a teammate of Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s is, if you're a Chevy fan, you've got to be thinking, it's pretty nice so far. Chevys have all done really, really well, but do you really think he's going to be able to hold on to the lead and dominate all race? And even I, as a Chase fan, will tell you, no. Fade him. I hate fading him, but you got to fade him. This is an easy pass. Especially if you pick him over the next play. If you pick him over the next guy, you're an idiot. $9,000, Martin Truex Jr. starting in 35th. You can own him 100% if you really want. And I'm going to be doing something sort of similar, maybe like 95%. But starting in 35th, that's a legitimate stud. And he's starting in the back. Like, this is exactly what you want. This is what you're looking for. The very back of the field, he's going to move up like 30 spots, finish in the top 10. The only issue here is that he's been in the garage all weekend long with not exactly car problems. He's just having problems like passing inspection over and over. He just keeps failing inspection. After the duel, he had qualified pretty well, but he failed inspection and will start in the back. And according to DraftKings, he's starting in the back, so that's all I care about. Even if he fails post-race inspection, his finish will still count for DraftKings points, so I don't really care, honestly. I'm just going to play him, even though, you know, I just really hope that the news of him always failing inspection and being in the garage a lot would get people off of him, because they really shouldn't be. Like, he's going to be about 60% owned, but he should really be about 80% owned, or more, just because he represents an insane amount of value. He might possibly be 100% owned in your 50-50s. That won't shock anybody. But in GPP, especially the lower dollar GPP, where a lot of the public will be, like the slingshot, he's going to be vastly under-owned, and you should definitely go overweight and heavy on him. At $8,800, Kurt Busch, this is pretty much a pass, starting 8th. The thing with him is that he never gets any fast laps or lead laps. He really doesn't, and he's not exactly the best at these kind of tracks. And he's absolutely not going to hurt you starting in 8th, so a pass for him. Probably a pass for Kenseth starting 9th at 8,700. He's another JGR car, so you can include him in some JGR stacks, but just this $8,000 range doesn't have much value in it at all. Kyle Larson at 8,500. Now, he's kind of interesting starting 16th. Like, don't get me wrong, he's super risky. He crashes more than almost anybody, but it kind of makes him sort of a good play in GPP, because he's very, very aggressive. He loves working the outside lines and just pushing his way to the front. He usually crashes here. The first four times he raced here in his career, he crashed. In the last two times, he finished 6th and 7th last year, so maybe a sign of good things to come, but he crashed in over half of his races last year, so just a terrible sign that he's not the safest. But starting 16th, he could possibly push his way up, and he's one of the few mid-range guys here that I could see really being in, like, the winning lineup potentially, but that's only with, like, a top 5 finish, so still risky to put him on a lineup. Now, Erik Jones at 8,300, he is actually very interesting. He's starting 34th, but he's in a Toyota, but he's not a JGR car, but he's a JGR affiliate, just like Martin Truex Jr. in the Furniture Row Racing crew. Now, he's a rookie coming in off of the Nextel Cup Series, which he is very good at, won several times last year, almost won the championship, but lost that out to Daniel Suarez. Now, he has actually raced in NASCAR 3 different times. That was all in 2015. He filled in for Kyle Busch once when he had injured himself at Kansas. He started 12th and finished last, but I think that was due to some problems. And he filled in for Matt Kenseth after he had purposefully ran into Joey Logano during the playoffs, and he filled in for two races, finishing 12th and 19th at Fort Worth and Phoenix, so it's not like he's coming in here with zero experience or anything. He's a really good driver, but he's still completely unknown. You know, you don't know what to expect out of him, but he's in fantastic equipment, and I think he can make that work for him. If you look at his Nextel Cup Series, the Xfinity Cup Series. I'm getting all mixed up here. The Xfinity Cup Series from last year, he messed up his first time at Daytona, finishing 31st after starting 5th, but I think that was due to mechanical issues. But when he actually got a full race in, he did finish top 10 at the other Daytona, so, you know, not a bad sign, but really for him, that's just kind of par for the course. I mean, he won several times, usually a top-tier driver, but, you know, it's really impressive when you're able to get wins on the Xfinity circuit, just because usually you have Kyle Busch and guys like Kyle Larson and stuff, or Joey Logano, that love to just use it as a practice session, and they usually run away with the win. So, you know, he's a good driver, and starting in the 34th position, he definitely has upside. I don't know if he'll finish in the top 10, but he could finish like 15th, and that'd be pretty normal, and that would make him a very good play. But at 8,300, he's probably not my favorite of the plays that are starting at the bottom, but definitely someone you want to strongly consider. Now, Austin Dillon, he has a phenomenal track record here at the Daytona. Never finished worse than 14th in his 6 times here, and has 5 top 10 finishes in that span. He's starting 10th, so he'll pretty much, you know, finish where he starts. So I don't see him with the highest upside. He's not going to lead laps or anything, so you can really avoid him if you want, but he maybe has like a 3 to 5% chance of being in the winning lineup. You know, just if he moves up to like 3rd or 4th or whatever. He did look pretty good during the Clash until he kind of crashed towards the end there and the qualifying duels. So, you know, just someone to consider, but starting 10th, I would generally avoid him. Jamie McMurray looked absolutely phenomenal during the Clash and the duels. He's at 8,000, but you don't really have to think about him that much because he's starting 3rd. He qualified so well. There's no way. You don't want to touch him starting 3rd. There's no chance of him leading a lap. He's an absolute must-avoid 100%. Clint Bowyer at 7,800, probably the same thing. Now, he'll always finish top 10 here, it seems like. He either crashes or finishes top 10. But starting 6th, again, no real upside for him at all. He's in new equipment finally, much, much better equipment than he was in last year. He's with the Stuart Haas Racing Team now, driving a Ford, but I don't see him doing anything. There's no way. He can't lead a lap here. I really don't see that happening. Now on to Daniel Suarez, who took over Carl Edwards' number 19 Toyota JGR car. He looked absolutely phenomenal at the Clash. He was second place until right there at the very end, ended up falling back to 8th, but very impressive showing for him. In JGR equipment, you never know. He could post a top, like, 7 finish or so and possibly be in that winning lineup. It's just once we get into the $7,000 range, that's when things start getting interesting as far as the place differential plays go. So 19th actually isn't really that great, and he's just like Erik Jones, you know, a rookie, the defending Xfinity Cup champion, and, you know, he's someone you probably want to sprinkle some exposure in, but he's just such an unknown, and this being a plate track and all, you don't really know. You know, there is some value for him, maybe if a bunch of guys up front crash, and he pushes his way up, but I'd really just sprinkle him in. We're about to get into the really good stuff here. So, 7,600, Casey Kane, I like him a lot. The second half of the season last year, he was phenomenal, awesome, always finishing in the top 10, just your place differential play week after week after week, and 7,600 is really cheap for him. We're used to seeing him in the $8,000 range. Starting 26th, that's value. For sure. He's in Hendrick Equipment, you know, with Jimmy Johnson and Dale Earnhardt Jr. and all of them. He looked pretty good at the duels until he got pushed back way late in the qualifying duel. So he's definitely someone that I'll be having a lot of exposure to at 7,600. 7,500, Ryan Newman, he's starting in 14th. That's pretty much an avoid. He doesn't really represent much value at all. He's not going to lead any laps. Ryan Blaney, starting at 36th at 7,300. Now, this is one of the best plays in the entire board. He looked phenomenal at the qualifying duels, just phenomenal. And he ended up crashing right at the very end there. And he's starting 36th. You want to play him in almost all of your lineups, honestly. He is amazing. He's finished top 20 the last two times out here. He's in Wood Brothers Racing, driving a Ford, which is an affiliate of Penske, and you know that Penske is just dominant at all things restrictor, so someone I want to have some very strong exposure to in the 80 to 90% range. He's going to push his way up to the top 15, maybe even the top 10. He looked just amazing, absolutely amazing at the qualifying duel. He just ran into some seriously bad luck, and that was a bad thing for me because I was playing him during those duels, but it's a great thing now because we have a super obvious play that I don't know if people overlook it. I still think he'll be very chalky in the 50% range or so, but you can definitely go very, very heavy overweight on him, and he has a very, very high possibility of being in that winning lineup, so I like him a ton. Also like Paul Menard, he was also involved in a crash in the qualifying duels. He'll start 33rd. And he's been a pretty good plate race driver. You know, usually finishes in the top 20 or so. Just maybe not the upside of Blaney, so I prefer Blaney for 100 more. But he's definitely someone that you're going to want to have a lot of ownership to. Sprinkle him in there just in a good percentage of your lineups. 7,000, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. He looked great, honestly, during the qualifying and everything. You know, these Fords are looking pretty darn good. But he's starting 11th, or no, he's starting 23rd, and that's okay. He can move up to about, you know, 10th or so. He finished 5th here in July, so he's someone you're going to want to sprinkle in, maybe about a 10 to 15% clip in GPP, but he definitely is nowhere near the level of a great play as, like, Blaney or Menard. But, you know, someone to consider. Trevor Bayne, 6,800, he was actually very popular as far as ownership goes in the duels, but he's starting in 11th position, and I think that's a bit too high for him. You know, he's pretty all right at these plate races, but just starting too high. And at 6,700, we have probably my favorite play on the entire board. Starting 38th, we have AJ Allmendinger. Sure, he messed up in the qualifying duel, but starting 38th, there's no way he stays in 38th. He's going to post a top 20 finish. Just absolute super value at 6,700. He allows you to Ford anybody that you want. So, play him in almost every single lineup. Even if he crashes, he's not going to kill you. He's not going to post negative points, you know. And he's definitely going to, you know, if he survives at least like a quarter of the race, he's going to, you know, skip by a lot of these like super scrub guys at the bottom and people crashing, you know, so there he just has a super safe floor. You'll lock him in every cash lineup for sure, along with like Blaney, you know, just one of the plays you're gonna want to make a heavy part of your rotation. Right underneath him at 6,600, Elliott Sadler, same thing, he's starting last. Now, Sadler is a veteran. He hasn't been on the circuit in a while. Last time he played Daytona was in 2012. He raced the 500 and finished 27th. But his overall driving rating is almost an 80, which is like up there with like Casey Kane and Austin Dillon, Jamie McMurray. You know, he's pretty good. He's been on the Xfinity Series, and he actually won at Talladega last year. So he's a good plate racer. Maybe a bit of a specialist, actually, if you want to put it like that. If you go by his lifetime NASCAR stats, and he has driven this race a lot, you know, in the past like 10, 12 years or so, and 46% of his total laps are in the top 15. Like, he's always up there. He's a phenomenal driver at these, or at least he was, and, you know, coming back to it, we've seen vets do pretty well here before. We've seen Michael Waltrip do all right last year. So, starting 40th, yeah, he definitely has a lot of upward potential. It's just not as guaranteed as, like, Allmendinger's or Blaney's. So, play him because I don't think his ownership's going to be that high, and it really should be. Another note about AJ Allmendinger, actually, if I can go back to him real fast, of everyone in the entire field, and this is with a very good sample size, over 10 races he's raced here, he has the most average fast laps of anybody in the entire field, even over all the studs. He averages 6 fast laps per race. Just something to throw out there. He's looking very, very good. Danica Patrick, 6,500, passed. She's starting 12th. That's way too high. Chris Buescher, starting 37th. He's at 6,400. He could be very sneaky. Starting 37th, my bad. He's starting 37th, so right near the back here. You could honestly just play all three, Allmendinger, Sadler, and Buescher, and then just hope there's a crash that wipes out the middle of the field, and you're sitting pretty. But, you know, I could say that he was a chase driver last year, but that was really, really fluky. I mean, it just rained out while people were pitting, and he just so happened to be in first because he hadn't pitted yet. And that's the only reason he won, only reason he was in the chase. But he is a former Xfinity Cup champion a few years ago. He's, as far as these scrubs go, he's one of the better scrubs. He's in Chevy JTG equipment, a new car, new ride this year. So we're not exactly sure how well he's going to be doing. And he's never really done that well here in the past. But his ownership is going to be really low, so you can definitely sprinkle him in. Going down to 6,300, Eric Almirola. I liked him a lot. He had the second fastest practice time, but starting 13th, too high. Ty Dillon, 6,200. He's taking over Casey Mears' car from last year. He's starting in 18th, and that's probably too high. Going down to 6,100, Michael Waltrip. He's starting 30th, and you know he's a bit of a plate track specialist, but he's very, very old. In a Toyota, which is fine, but I don't really see much upside with him starting 30th. Maybe if he was starting, like, 38th, I'd play him, but, pass. At 6,000, David Reagan. Now, he's a former winner. Usually a scrub, but he's a lot better at these plate tracks. He is starting 20th because he did have such a good showing at the duel, but he had pushed his way, like, way up there to, like, the third or fourth position for the longest of time. He looked great, honestly, but, you know, probably starting just a touch too high, but I'd sprinkle him in there a little bit. You know, he has 3 top 17 finishes in his last 4 times out, so he could possibly move his way up to the top 10. But not likely. But he's probably the cheapest person I would play, honestly. And with that said, I'll just go through the bottom of this field here and just kind of do a, well, most, I'm just going to say pass for all of these. Maybe play one, but, you know, Joey Gaze at 5,900, pass, starting 29th. Yeah, no. Michael McDowell, I loved him. I love him a lot. Just finished 10th here last year. 15th the year before that, but starting 22nd, that's just a little too high. I mean, I'll sprinkle him some, yeah, but just a little too high of a starting position. Matt DiBenedetto starting 25th, probably a strong pass there. Landon Castle at 5,500, I think he's criminally underpriced. Castle's a really good plate driver and all. He's starting 27th. I think he's probably the favorite of these, like, super under $6,000 scrub plays that I like. So, if you really need a punt, which you absolutely don't. I mean, a lot of the reason I'm not playing these guys is because why would I play Landon Castle at 5,500 if I could easily afford, like, a Sadler or an Allmendinger and be able to afford anybody I want? In fact, I'm leaving, like, $1,000 to $2,000 on the table pretty much every lineup. That's just how it's working out. But if you want to be different, you can hit up Landon Castle at 5,500. Corey LaJoie at 5,400, starting 31st pass. Cole Witt at 5,300. I liked him. He had a good history here, but he qualified really, really well at 17th, so that's a huge pass. DJ Kennington, starting 28th pass. Brendan Goggin at 5,100. Kind of interesting. A little bit interesting, just because he's starting in 39th. And, you know, of that last time he played, it was the 2015 race, he finished 28th. So maybe if there's, yeah, I'd sprinkle him in maybe just a few lineups just in case he moves up to like 20th or something. Might make him a supreme value just because he's starting in 39th. But for the most part, pass. And Jeffrey Earnhardt starting 32nd. Huge, humongous, no way in hell pass. So that goes through the entire top 40 there. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. I'll be looking forward to doing that one for next week and really one for every race this upcoming year. So hope you guys have a good 2017 NASCAR season, and I'll see you at Victory Lane. See ya!